Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So I'm going to put on my measuring thing.
Good.
And then we'll go.
With Paul Tolkinson and Rob Deering.
My route is really haphazard. And also, Rob, I am going to run slower than you.
Oh, well, don't run slow. I'll run the same speed, otherwise I'll just get further and further.
That wouldn't work.
Let me just bring the listeners in on this. Morning, it's Running Commentary. The voice you can hear is not Paul Tonkinson. It's my very welcome guest, Shabarat Kulsandy.
Ah, thank you very much. That was a beautiful pronunciation of my name.
Yeah.
For the artist formerly known as Shappy Kulsandy. Yeah. Although I am still Shappy, you know, you can still call me Shappy.
Of course, you'll always be Shappy to me, but I'm happy to, you know, correct things up as things move with the times. But we'll get to that as well. See, we've got so much to talk about. So Paul is still injured.
Yes. What's wrong with him?
He's got a groinal injury.
Oh no.
It's nice that you asked, because he wouldn't be happy if we didn't use the word groin a few times. He's on the way back though. We're just taking extra care that he doesn't get injured again, you know, he gets fully recovered.
Yes.
And also, you know, we've got lots of lovely friends, comedians, runners, old pals.
Did you just get bored of his company and then kick him in the groin?
Sick of him. Kicked him so hard in the nadgers. No, it's not true. So I came out, it's really funny because we just met at Northfield Station.
Yes.
And I was coming through West London to get there. We're going in the park. Nice. Lammas Park.
Yes.
Nice.
Welcome to Lammas Park. Woo-hoo.
And I just suddenly realised that I know this place because I grew up in West London.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, we moved out to the country when I was in my early teens.
Oh, right.
So I thought, I thought I was going somewhere completely new. And round every corner, it's like, oh, yeah, I know this, I know that.
So it was in Ealing you grew up?
Well, not really. I was out in Heston.
Oh, right.
But my dad's family are in Fulham.
Right.
My mum's family are in Greenford.
Yes,
and there was a lot of travelling around, grandparent action. And just all the streets around here are familiar to me. And the parks, not this one, though. So anyway,
well,
welcome
it is
to the show. I'll stop talking soon.
Ealing is known as Queen of the Suburbs because of its amount of green spaces.
Yeah.
It's the greenest borough, I believe.
As you said that, we came around the corner and there's a pushy mum's group planking in Lammas Park.
Yes.
Which just kind of catches it, doesn't it? It's
Do you say pushy mums?
Well, just, I mean, that's what it's called.
Yes.
I didn't mean to character assassinate the mums in question. But they're planking. Do you plank?
I used to plank. I used to live near... Hold on a minute. So I was one of those people that never really exercised.
Right.
I used to live in Brixton when I was married. And my ex-husband used to run every day. He still does. And I ran with him to Brockwell Park once. And I made the park gates. and then I had to go back home. And then when I, when we separated, I needed to do something with my head. So I started doing a park thing in Richmond Park, like a fitness thing.
Yeah.
And I got my fitness up. And then I found on the days where I wasn't doing it, my legs would be like, come on.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Woken her up. They wanted
to
go. That's excellent.
So I went from being someone that couldn't run for a bus to someone that had to run every single day around Richmond Park. And then when I moved to Ealing, I stopped because I didn't have Richmond Park anymore.
Right.
But I've just started again, as you can hear. I'm already panting.
And also, Ealing is the queen of the suburbs because it's full of green spaces.
Yes.
I've heard.
It is. You heard that from me just now.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
And, do you find that when you first start running, like this bit's hard, and after the first kilometre, you sort of forget about your legs?
Yeah. And really, you know, you were just saying about panting. No matter how many times I do chatty talking runs, particularly with recording, I just realise that there's a moment, about 5 minutes in, where, and it's not even really to do with being in any way exhausted, it's just about rhythm, where you're breathing and your legs and everything kind of go, and then they just settle in.
Yes.
And basically all your little yellow warning lights go off and your body just starts getting on with it.
Yes, because I don't normally talk and run. Sometimes I see people in pairs going, yes, and then I told him that that's not the right school for my child. And then, well, have you tried that school? I go, I can't do that kind of running. I need to be.
Yeah, today you have.
Today I'm enjoying myself.
But we don't have to write about schools.
And so we had a moan about, I had my moan about schools before you turned all the apparatus on.
I was in the Victoria Park once, and there was this old guy in the cafe. He was an old guy, but he was sort of dressed for exercise and stuff, and like a neckerchief. And he was talking so loud. Yeah. Quite nice. I don't think he's hard of hearing. Just something about it was just standing in the middle of this cafe saying, yeah, I think I'm going to have a latte. And I heard him again later talking to his friend, and the whole thing, the penny dropped because he was a cyclist.
Oh, right.
So he'd been cycling with his friend, and they're shouting to each other on the bikes.
Right.
And he had not adjusted the volume when he stopped for coffee.
Yeah, so.
He was talking at bike volume.
And so often people like that are judged, aren't they?
Yeah.
The lycra wankers. But actually, they're just fit people that have been shouting at a volume and doing their thing, yeah.
This is a really nice park, by the way, Lammas Park.
Thank you.
Going on about being here. I've never been here. The place that was really evocative for me, straight over the road from Northfield Station, it's called Ealing Christian Centre.
Yes.
It's an old cinema.
Yeah.
It's an absolute favourite cinema of mine. I used to meet there. I think I used to get on the underground from Hounslow, and my nan would meet me there because she was always happy to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
And it's just the golden era. You know, I'd have been about 11 or 12, I think, at that cinema I saw. Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Splash. Back to the Future. All that jazz. Great stuff. Return of the Jedi.
This fuzz is touching my chin a bit. Oh, it's all right. It's those yours.
Yeah, it's for the best.
So you live in Walthamstow now, right?
Not quite. Newington Green.
So there's an old cinema there.
Is it open?
That the Soho Theatre are converting into a massive venue, I think.
Excellent.
That's what we should do.
Yeah.
With old cinemas.
Great. Well, if Soho Theatre opening up, then I can be sure to never be booked there.
Oh, and me actually, because that's 1,000 seater, and I think I might be booked for the odd charity event.
But career aside, you are running again. You said you got back into it, but I know also one of the reasons I was keen to run with you today is you're doing a half marathon of the weekend.
I am. I'm doing a half marathon on next Sunday. I don't know when this podcast is going out.
Well, this will be out before then, hopefully. Keen listeners will be able to cheer you on.
I'm doing the award-winning Ealing Half Marathon.
Nice. Well, we just crossed the road and gone into a park. Is it a different park?
Yeah, this is Walpole Park.
Nice.
And in the war, this was used as allotments to grow vegetables for people. Yeah.
Nice, good. That's nicer than Victoria Park, which I just mentioned, yes, which was a huge gun battery.
Right.
They had massive guns for taking down the bombers during the Blitz. I prefer vegetables.
Yeah.
But obviously, both necessary when the nation's under siege.
Well, I mean, this Ealing was proper countryside back then.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember reading a biography of Charlie Chaplin, uh-huh, and saying that he moved from Brixton through to the countryside of Hanwell.
Yeah.
Which, on horse carts. So, nowadays, Ealing's
there. It's not that long ago, is it? It's crazy.
No.
Even when I was young, it was a different space. Apart from anything else, it was just like the war had just finished.
Yeah.
People had shelters in the gardens. There was an air raid siren at the top of the road that they'd occasionally test out. There was some bombs, buildings. They were long grown over, but they were basically old bomb sites. And this is way out in West London. Imagine what it would have been like where I live now in the 70s, even let alone the 50s and 60s.
So where did your folks move to after?
I went to the country.
Oh, okay.
We went to the country. So we lived in halfway between Oxford and High Wycombe.
Nice.
And then went to school out there. And then moved back to London when I met my good lady love. And we followed her job back to town. And then at first I came to London for a course. Doing a course in Highbury. Clown course.
Oh, yeah.
In the mid-90s, and I had that thing where London was absolutely terrifying.
Not the circus space.
No, it was up in a studio up on... it wasn't the circus space. It was a temporary space being used by Philippe Ngolier.
Oh, was it Philip?
Yeah.
Loads of people have done his course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was recommended because I have friends who've done it and been to kind of Copenhagen and had this wonderful time, half a dozen of them clowning with the greats. And then when I was there, it was about 30 of us, and he seemed bored and tired.
Right.
But also he had his favourites, and they had a great time.
Yeah,
and
it's always the way, isn't it? Yeah.
It kind of slipped through the gaps, really. But I liked it. In the theory, it was great. I just didn't get much practice.
Whenever there's a course or any sort of
nice
thing, it's nice, isn't it? Yeah. There's always the people that absolutely loved it. Then there's always the people that were left sort of slightly at the side going, what?
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're that much of a kind of guru, you don't have to do stuff that day-to-day teachers have to do, which is kind of look after everyone in the group. I was really young as well. I was kind of thinking, I'll do this, I'll do that. But, they would have thought, who's this kid? You know what I mean?
Do you know what? Hang on. Let's pass these children. So I got really unfit after I had my daughter 8 years ago. Like when I first moved to Ealing, I was still fit enough to run to Richmond Gate from Ealing, run through Richmond Park to Roehampton Gate, run to Hammersmith, and then get the tube home.
Brilliant. How far is that?
I think it was about 14k.
Yeah.
Something like that. I'm not 100% sure.
Some distance.
But then I just stopped. And then I put on a lot of weight in lockdown, and I thought, I'm going to be like the young ones talking about body positive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll just go into middle age, a bit potato-y. And then I got rid of all my size 8 clothes.
Yeah.
And bought myself some size 12 to 14 clothes.
Yeah.
And actually, running's not for your figure, is it? It's for your head.
Yeah.
I know it's such a cliche thing to say.
Oh, but it's so true.
It's so true.
We just find it over and over again. People often talk about running being good for mental health, but it's because it's just worth repeating. It bears repeating.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you find out anew whenever it works for you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So then I started to... I listened to Chris Evans's radio show in lockdown, and they're all about running. And then... I read your brilliant book, Running Tracks.
Thank you.
And because another thing is, when I run, and when you're a busy parent, often when I run is when I can indulge myself in music that I like. So, and then I discovered your podcast, and actually running with you to your podcast, having this lovely, carefully curated song what's it called? Playlist. Playlist. And then I thought, right, this is it. I'm going to do the marathon and I'm going to finish it. It's not going to be like the Brighton half.
Yeah.
When I finish in a really good time. I'm putting my ego aside about time.
Yeah, yeah. Because, well, that's connected to what you were saying. It's not about how fast you do it. It's about the doing of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, it's, you know, now I've lost that weight again. I have to get rid of my size 12 to 14 clothes. Buy some.
You need some kind of clothes storage facility.
I think I do. I think I do. But no, it just
feels great. You've been using the Running Tracks Radio Hour.
Yeah.
My goodness,
it's brilliant
really
because it's just when I was like running before, between you and me and everyone listening, I was going through a really tough time, and I was running for survival without sounding dramatic.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm fine. Yeah. And then I thought, no, I need help. I need a buddy.
Yeah.
That I can switch on and off and put on pause if I need to.
Well, it makes me realise that if we're doing this live, but I should have brought some records.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Now something from classic era Prince.
Eminem is my... If I'm flagging, it's got to be Eminem.
Lose yourself.
Till I collapse.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, well, that's excellent. And it's half an evening. When did you do that other half in Brighton?
I did it in 2012.
Okay, nice.
So a long time ago. And I did it in 1 hour, 50 minutes.
Oh, that was good.
And I'll be happy if I do this within 2 hours and 20.
Yeah.
Because I'm older now, you know.
Yeah, and that's not much different, really. I think the main thing with... I think you're so wise. It's so true what you say about being cool about pace. But the nice thing, and you'll get a bit of that from doing an event, is you do want to do it... I want to use the phrase as fast as you can. Well, that makes it sound like you're absolutely leathering it. But what I mean is, you want to do it at the pace that's within your power to get it done.
Yes.
Otherwise, you'll be out there all day and it'll just wear thin. But that's not the same as trying to get your best ever time. And the fact that you've got a great time and you remember it and
you're
proud of it. So that can abide.
Yeah, and also because I was like, you know, I didn't have the sports opportunities. I was going to say I wasn't a sporty kid, but I didn't have the opportunities. And because I was fat, I felt really embarrassed in games because, I don't know.
Well, because...
Because I was a kid and...
And also because thinking was not as elevated as it is these days.
Absolutely.
In terms of celebrating individuals and different ways to be healthy and
it is
so
interesting
on and so forth.
When I talk to my children about stuff like that, they're like baffled.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't exist in there.
No, that's right.
Culture.
Oh, shame. When I was at school, when I went to secondary school, that first winter, they... games was our first like term of games was indoor games. It was nothing specific. It was just that, you know, the other half of the year we're out on the field doing football and stuff, and we were indoors doing basketball and various other stuff. Anyway, the reason I mention this is because the kit was shorts, socks and shoes.
Right.
We were expected not to wear tops. Or and they'd give us like tabards, and they'd give five boys little tabards, and the other five would go, you'd go skins.
Yeah.
So we'll go tops, you go skins. Of course, these sort of whippety lads who would love games didn't even think about it. I remember me and this other guy who were lardy, you know.
Yeah.
Just sitting cross-legged on the floor of the sports centre, just feeling so horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because why was I sitting there with my top off?
That's weird, isn't it?
Self-image, and this is like age 11, 12, you know,
on
the brink of puberty. I mean, for goodness sake. I mean, if there was a teacher there saying, you guys are all great, we celebrate you, but not in an inappropriate way, then maybe that would have been fine. But I'll tell you what, that wasn't happening.
No.
They weren't doing that.
No, it's very different now. It's interesting to see how my own kids are both, they're both of them really sporty.
Yeah.
And my little girl's 8 and she started doing athletics. So I bought her this athletics crop top and shorts.
Yeah.
And one morning went to go for a run and she's like, I feel self-conscious.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? And she's like, because my belly's showing.
Yeah.
And I said, but you're wearing a sports top.
Yeah.
It's a warm day and we're going running. And I said, right, we're going to take your top, your long T-shirt, and the minute you feel self-conscious, you wear it. She's like, fine.
Yeah.
We went for the run. We did just a mile.
Yeah.
And her cheeks are flushed. She's run beautifully.
Yeah.
And she's power walking home.
Yeah.
So confident. I was like, why do you think that you're not self-conscious anymore? She goes, because I'm strong.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
She's a freaking queen.
That's how it makes you feel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good, isn't it? It's a nice counterpoint to what I was saying.
Yeah.
It was different then. But we found it. I remember.
Yep.
It must be quite a long time ago. But I remember when I was first running, I was going around in Edinburgh saying, who else is running? Let's run. Let's meet in the meadows and have a run. And you said, yeah, let's go. And so we'd arranged to go for a run on the meadows during the Edinburgh Festival. And
then yeah.
I went out and did my show. I'm sure you went out and did your show. It may well have been a weekend. One, maybe someone had a late gig at Leighton Live or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw you. We passed each other on the meadows about 4 a.m., both on different drunken adventures.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's no way she's turning up for a run in 4 hours from now, or whatever it was. And you totally did.
Yeah. That was a mad summer of boozing and running.
Yeah, which is, you know, not necessarily a healthy thing, but
no.
Something in there. Something in the running abiding, you know, staying with that
so
kind of...
So that was around 2011, 2012, I think.
Right.
And that was when the height of my broken-hearted, yet living on adrenaline
yeah.
period in my life.
A kind of not necessarily positive hedonism.
No. I'm glad I survived it.
Yeah.
And it's nice to...
And you kept up a relationship with running. I mean...
I did, yes.
Using, you know, I suppose we don't want to be using... alcohol to numb the pain.
No.
But at least if we're using running to numb the pain as well, then we're onto something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And now it's just, you know, and I'm sure you do, when you tell people you're doing a half marathon, you always say, so I get someone going, I could never do that. And you think, that's how I used to think.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't run. I said to my friend the other day, don't run, walk.
Yep, yep.
That's all you do, you walk.
Yeah.
Walk for half an hour.
Yeah.
Whenever you feel like it, just put your shoes on. And then you're against your will, your body will get fitter and your legs will eventually pick themselves up.
Yep.
I get really sad when people feel under pressure
yep.
to
to
exercise.
Perform, to do things that other people
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this a moment ago. I saw the advert for the, what do they call it when kids run a mile in the morning? The morning mile or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I just feel bad because I know some kids aren't going to want to do that.
Yeah.
It's going to put some of them off it.
For life.
It just feels a little bit, it's just a bit too rigid for me.
Yeah, because not all kids are sporty. People's,
no?
Like Cass, my son, he was... He's really sporty. He does so well in his football team and he runs. But that all happened once he went to high school
yeah.
and grew into his body.
Yeah.
And his...
And made his own choices.
Yeah, and his primary school teacher, PE teacher, we saw him the other day, just looked at him and went, oh my God, you've lost so much weight. I said, don't say that to my boy.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, but you got to, you know what PE teachers are
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't coddle. No, but like, you know, not being funny, but he was quite, you know, chunky.
Yeah.
But now he's, so that pub is called the Red Lion.
Uh-huh.
And it's where Sid James used to drink.
Oh, have you got my phone turned out? Can you take a picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to stand there and take
yeah,
a picture?
I'll go. I'll go in, actually stand in the middle of the road and laugh until I get run over. Wait. Here we go. I'm saying the sunshine, I really am in the middle. See when?
Done it.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. So Sir James used to drink in there, did you say?
Yes.
Because we're near... quite near Ealing Studios and the film
yeah,
piece.
Yeah, we're about to pass Ealing Studios.
Great.
Which they still film stuff there.
Do they still have comedy there? Or
but the main building is now flats.
Yeah.
There we go. Look.
Oh, yeah, balcony. I am... Oh, gosh. There it is. Great. We've been showing the kids Ealing films. The great thing is, is sometimes so dark. They really, because they wear it so so subtle.
Yeah.
But they really are. People talk about black comedy, but Kind Hearts and Coronets and the Lady Cats.
Oh, God, I love that.
It's amazing what goes on. So, yeah, and there used to be a gig here.
Yes.
Nice gig. Just up here somewhere behind
run by me. Simon Randall, who now runs Headliners in Chiswick. Yeah. That was one of the first gigs I used to play at, and Peter Crouch used to go there because he's from here.
Right.
And then when he was in...
That's a tall story.
Didn't want him sitting in front of you. Oh, my goodness.
There so it is. That's where the gig was, down the back there.
Yes. Such a great gig. And you know what? I remember when they had a night at Reading Studios where it was all sketch comedy. Uh-huh. And it would be rammed.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be that same thirst
no,
for sketch
that wouldn't necessarily
now.
Happen, that would it? Yeah. No, sketch gigs were quite... I suppose they do exist, and there's also... It's a different kind of circuit, but...
Yeah, they go straight online, don't they?
Yeah. And I used to, of course, because it was kind of before the internet, I used to cross over with a bunch of those guys. Mainly because of music, I think, or comparing. It was great to go to gigs with all different stuff, but also having that conversation with some... with a younger comedian at the weekend, saying how... About how... How much kind of alternative cabaret there used to be in stand-up.
Yes.
Back in the sort of late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
To work Woody Bop Muddy.
Yes.
Getting the audience to choose between records and either, if they were good, he hammered them to the wall.
Nail
if
it.
If they were bad, he smashed
save
them.
Save it,
and
yeah.
In between, he rubbed rice into a broom. You couldn't do that now, could you?
You couldn't. I remember seeing Woody Bop Muddy at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Closing the show.
Yeah.
And I'd had... A bit of a wild Glastonbury and lost all my friends. And I just sat there and it was like balm to my soul.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't care so
just
much about anything.
Pure craziness.
As much as I cared about which records to save.
So what did you have to shout out? Save it or smash it?
I was always a saver.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a bleeding heart. And then he had that weird kitsch little kitten. Oh, and there's the Questers Theatre here somewhere, which is a brilliant Amdram Theatre in Ealing.
Nice. There's also this little posh school. We saw some kids from it in the park just now. Their lovely little hoodies. It's all very nice around here, isn't it?
Yeah, their classes are very small.
Yes.
Like the actual physical classrooms.
Yeah, their classes are very small, but their classrooms are very small, but their class is quite upper middle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tend to be rich.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover there. Running
commentary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Are we going in? Again?
Yeah, yeah. So this is Walpole Park.
Walpole Park. We're back in the parks. I love it. I've just got that lovely feeling of freedom. People who listened to Running Commentary last week will know I got horribly lost twice recently in Wales. And it's nice today to run with you and realise that I'm not paying any attention to where we are.
Yes. You know what? Neither am I.
Oh, no.
I was trying to be a bit more adventurous than take you around to the same park.
That's cool.
But I can't breathe, run and think
no.
at the same time.
Well, I mean, Paul said the other day that we think that there's something healthy in... Because I'm always a bit ashamed because I consider myself quite the orienteerer.
Yes.
Orienteer? I don't know. Someone who can read maps.
Yeah.
And yet, in running, it turns out I'm always getting lost. And I think... This is what we said this last week. Your one's left brain, one's creative brain.
Yeah.
The same bit that likes listening to music, gets ahead.
Yeah.
Basically gets ahead of the logistician. And then the person with the map goes, wait a minute, where are we now? So it's actually something quite healthy and getting, for particularly for someone a bit kind of neat freaky or obsessive to get
lose
lost
themselves, yeah. Do you ever, when you're gigging out of town, somewhere, you know, miles away from London, unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And you go for a run. You go, oh, there's some nice peaks around here.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get totally lost.
Yeah.
Like, it's noon. I've been running since nine.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know where my hotel is.
Best one of those was, I was in blooming Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
I was in Lausanne.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And I
beautiful.
Thought, I'll run down to the lake and back up. And I didn't take a phone. And I just completely misjudged the scale of the town. So running down to the lake was not, you know, I sort of imagined it being about 10 minutes. It was about 4 miles down the hill. I ran along it for a bit, started running back up. And I just, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. No phone, no way of finding where I was staying. No way to tell the other comedian, you know, that I didn't know where it was and that, maybe best go on to the gig without me. And just had, I ran, so it was the furthest I'd ever run because I had to run just to stay warm. Eventually I found a massive hospital. I wasn't ill or anything, it was just quite near where I was staying.
Yeah, I had that in Richmond Park once. I just ran and ran, got lost. And I'm like, I'm never going to find my way out. Then I found the Royal Ballet School.
Yeah.
And I realised I was actually very near my gate.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
And then by the time you get there, you're like... I can't believe this is real. It's like some part of you is always still lost out there.
Yeah.
And so it's a classic episode.
What made you stop running? I've read your book, but I want to hear it from you.
Yeah, well...
Because I remember when years ago when you started to come to gigs with a healthy Tupperware box full of food, I thought, oh, he's changed.
Yeah.
I just have to take some water. Hang on.
True story. No, I mean, I think there was a whisper of it throughout my life. Mm. Like, just as a... you know, I was that kid, like, relating to what we're talking about. You know, if I wasn't such a born rebel and resistor to authority...
Yes.
I probably would have enjoyed exercise at school more.
Yeah.
But, you know, those times when they were telling me to run, I'm saying, sod off.
Yeah.
And going, you know, and being fat, which I was into. It was good for me. And then... but I knew that I could go quite fast, and on occasion I'd do it and had a bit of stamina. So it was kind of there... Deep on the hard drive, you know?
Yeah, same.
But I never did it. And then I dabbled a tiny bit in my early 20s. I thought, I'm going to run for health. And I went and ran for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, and then just coughed all day.
Yeah.
Because I'm mildly asthmatic, and at that point I smoked quite heavily.
Yes.
So it was really not good at all. But again, there were the seeds were there.
But we were the 90s 20-year-olds, weren't we?
Yeah.
We were the 90s 20-something.
This is not a time for...
It's not a healthy decade.
For a couch to 5K, that's right.
No.
Anyway, I sort of, like many a person who has a relationship with food, I sort of bust and boom down the years. And I got quite fit one summer. And then, you know, thought, oh, I feel good. And then I put on loads of weight after that.
Yeah.
And one new year, I made a New Year's resolution to... just to be healthy, but it was no wheat or pastry, no calorific drinks, and portion control, like careful about how much I ate at mealtimes and not eating between meals. And deep down psychologically also, there was deep psychological stuff with mums. Both my mother-in-law and my mum were very ill at the time.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
that. And
it
just made me... It changed my whole relationship with being parented.
Yes.
You know, and it's sort of like the child in me that was a feeder.
Yeah.
You know, just matured and went away. And so the New Year's resolution stuck. And I lost 2 stone in about 6 weeks. And I wasn't even really trying. It just took. Do you know what I mean? It was The absolute victory of it was the moment. I could have done it any other year and gone, this is too hard, forget it in 3 days. But that year, 2008, was just, it was like I'd been waiting for me to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so much so that I lost 4 or 5 stone in the end. And that summer, it was quite, I felt quite odd. And then in the autumn, I started running, and it took a kind of year of running for me to settle into my new shape.
Yes.
And physiognomy. And that was the beginning of the rest of my life. But yes. I think looking back in 2007, the sort of academic year, 2007 to 2008, I was really unhappy. But I hadn't really noticed.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go. That's the true story of how I got into running.
Back then, we didn't talk about the stuff we talk about now.
No.
You know, we didn't talk about self-care or anything. I was sat with some of the really successful women comics who are about 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Like the household names, right?
Yeah.
And they were talking about the apps that they use to come down after gigs.
Wow, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I get this and that. It can really help me come down. I can sleep because they're so industrious. And it's not like the punk profession that we went into in the 90s.
But also, you just see that negativity about it. I mean, it's like back then when I first, made that New Year's resolution, I'd been having a lot of very unhealthy late-night pizzas.
Yeah.
And most gigs are going to have a pizza. The cheaper, buy one, get one free, I'll have two. I had a really bad pizza habit. Yeah. And I thought, God, I'm really going to miss this. Anyway, jump forward to like a year and a half later. And I didn't miss it at all. I was thinking, I hated myself.
Yeah.
These pizzas would just, I might as well have been punching myself in the face.
It was self-harm. That kind self-harm. Of
and when you look at it in terms of comedy, we were having this conversation again. I think maybe people are really seeing it now because people are getting back to it after lockdown.
Yeah.
But Rich Wilson was there, me and him with the old guard in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how the younger comedians were saying, were people more, was there more substance abuse in comedy? And I think that's a long time ago that, like before our time, that comedy was a very kind of drugged up scene.
Yeah.
Basically, comedians behaving like rock stars.
Yeah, that but wasn't again, the case with
it. It doesn't seem. There's a desperation to it.
Yeah.
I remember someone saying a long time ago about doing a gig with someone who was chemically heightened for their set at this massive charity gig. And they were saying, why would you get high to do that? That is a high.
Yeah.
You do 5 minutes of your best jokes to 3,000 people. You do not need drugs
Absolutely.
To enjoy that.
Absolutely. I remember a very clear moment in the 90s when it was the absolute end of my chemical life. When I thought, I hate the sunrise. The sunrise is not meant to make me feel depressed.
No, there should be joy there.
There should be joy in the sunrise.
Yeah.
So I stopped doing all that.
Well, it just goes to show that it was all we, looking at it the other way around, you know, it was there for us.
Yes.
You know? We were ready to turn that switch off when the day came.
And then like no matter what state you got yourself into, I think you were still lucky if you were the sort of person, which I think you are, and I am, that still saw the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And knew that what they needed to do ultimately to get themselves out of a funk.
Yep.
I recently got help for attention deficit disorder.
Yeah.
So I'm on these tablets that target the part of my brain that organises the rest of my brain.
Right. That's
clever. And it's been a game changer.
Yeah.
And it's really made me understand how I have been.
So what's the difference in your experience day to day? How does that, what are the...
I have no anxiety, Rob.
Yeah.
I didn't know that feeling that I constantly had was external. Like it was not external, but it was neurological.
Right, right.
So, you know, if I needed to make a decision about work or something went wrong or someone spoke to me funny, I would lose sleep. I would be absolutely debilitated with anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all to do with the fact that my brain couldn't process emotions. It would scatter and it would go in all different directions.
Just sprinkling into all the aspects of your day.
And now have the same, you know, issues in my life, because life is life.
Yep.
And I deal with it the way people that I was in awe of deal with it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is bad, but we need to deal with it. We need to talk to them.
Yeah.
It's going to be an uncomfortable conversation, but we're going to have it.
And we'll survive and just live on, yeah.
Bit of, just kind of a bit more grown up, and it's helped me to understand my past a bit better.
Yep.
So there's a lot of healing, a lot of forgiveness.
Oh, that's great.
And all of that. So it's been amazing.
Well, it's good to hear, and it's nice to know that running is a part of it.
Yes.
And that it's back.
It is.
The other thing, talking about being back, we need to be back at Northfields here. I wanted to illustrate for the listeners your reclamation of Shabarak.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, do you want to stop here, or should we go around one more little park?
One more little park?
Yeah.
If you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Path.
Oh, so my changing my name from Shappy to Sharp Haddock is really...
Sorry, I'll say it better.
It's not...
Sharp Haddock.
No, you said it perfectly.
Thank you.
It's no different, really, to you saying, look, I've been Rob professionally.
Yeah.
But from now on, can I be Robert?
Yeah.
Because that's the name my parents gave me. Rob was a way to make it easier for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And...
But surely I think there's also maybe a... more of a cultural depth.
Yeah.
Because you might have been feeling like you had to, make it easier for people in society or whatever.
Absolutely, because nowadays it's really considered very culturally unsophisticated to look at an unusual foreign name and say, oh, you're going to have to shorten that for me. I'll never get that.
Yeah, yeah. Or the old, remember seeing the old clip of a newsreader saying, I'm not even going to try and pronounce
yes.
that. So that's privilege at work, isn't it, really?
That's it. And we've moved on from that. You know, we've got Bukayo Saka and Raheem Sterling. They haven't shortened their names. And interestingly, they're from around here.
Yeah.
And they went to similar schools as I did.
Yeah.
But at my school, even though a huge... a load of the kids had foreign names. We all shortened them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was also Sunnies and Sams and...
Yep.
Everyone was a bit shy about their long name.
Yeah.
And then what really turned me was I did an Iranian television show.
Uh-huh.
And they billed me a Shappy.
Yeah.
And an Iranian TV show didn't know my full name was Shahpadek.
Right.
And I was like... it's such a pretty name.
Yeah.
It means butterfly. So I thought, I want my identity back, my name back.
Yeah.
Getting a bit too old for Shappy.
Well, names and words are important as well, aren't they? Yeah. Little things we call things. You get it a lot in kind of mythology and fantasy novels. But it's true. Nominative determinism is a thing.
Yes.
It's all to do with how we define ourselves. And it's interesting that it means butterfly because you very much... you know, you've changed from a chaterpillar into a...
I love that, a chaterpillar.
I remember you used to do comedy about it when I first knew you. I remember coming down to see... I think I knew you already. We'd gigged together and I followed you to that terrible gig in Stoke Newington.
Yeah.
To try and get a gig myself.
Oh, God, yeah.
Joe's Comedy Madness.
Yes, which is still on my Wikipedia page. I'll do like Question Time.
Yeah.
And the blurb on me will be also star of Joe's Comedy Madhouse.
Oh, it was bad. I think it's still a venue. I'm sure there's still comedy there, but the Mad Joe of Joe's Comedy Madhouse may not be involved anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one where they had the bright red light shining as the light.
Yes.
And it was behind me and I was comparing. And members of the audience said, we're enjoying the show, but we're feeling nauseous. And I told Joe... and he said, yes, it's the way we like it. It's traditional. It's traditional that the audience can't laugh properly because they think they might puke.
Yeah. Whatever happened to him?
Yeah, well.
I wonder. All those old characters that had clubs.
Yeah, and he was old school in a different way because he was the typical functioning alcoholic journalist.
He was.
He used to go and do a couple of hours solid work, then do a couple of hours solid drinking.
Yes,
then
I remember.
I was not particularly solid work and then come and run his comedy club.
Whew. Hey, are you feeling?
Yeah, okay. What park are we in now?
This is Blondin Park.
Right.
This park became the extended garden of my local community in lockdown. To this day, if I see someone in this park that I don't recognise, I'm like, excuse me, and you are?
But that's something I was thinking earlier on when you were saying about just walk until you can run. It's one of the most, I'm glad I'm saying this because I'm sure it's what Paul would say, one of the most solidly, comprehensively good things about lockdown was the way it celebrated exercise for health.
Absolutely.
And sure, not everyone did it and not everyone could do it, but for people who accessed walking, running, just being outside day to day, and found something good in that, that was just the good outcome of 2020, and there weren't that many. So that's good.
And also I made a bunch of, you know, lovely new friends.
Yeah.
By walking my dog, and because the dog walkers seem to have the license to be out.
Yes.
You know, more than anyone else.
And, yeah.
And so we just became this pack. And
also you're a crossover act because you can do the running and the dog walking. Often those two groups can be a little bit... can be a bit West Side Story between those two.
Oh, I know. Because I've seen joggers get so aggro at friends' dogs.
Yeah.
And it's like, the park is for everyone. it was in lockdown. I was in a park called Pitshanger Park, where I walk with my friend, and there's a few of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this woman was so angry that we're in her way, because what happened was they're beating their personal best. That's the biggest snail in the world.
That's a slug the size of a foot.
We all know that slug.
Whoa.
I just thought, in lockdown, forget about your personal best. You're sharing a park with toddlers.
Yeah, that's right.
And people at all hours.
Yeah, that's the runner's worst behaviour is the beeline, isn't it? And the trouble is that it works at both ends of the running scale, because if you're a really fierce runner, then you do that kind of pow, pow.
Yeah.
And you have this poor, scaredy old person on the pavement going, ah!
I know.
Or people who've just started out running and they're too tired to detour.
Yes.
So they just come down the middle of the pavement going, I'm sorry, but this breathing is going to happen here.
Yeah. There's, I enjoy it when I'm running and someone's young dog jumps up at me, because they're always ready for me to have a go.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's all right, love dogs.
Yeah.
And then they're all relieved.
That would not be my response.
Yes. It is funny, isn't it? I am part of both worlds.
Yeah. Very good, you know. You're a diplomat.
I am a diplomat.
Yeah. Maybe you should take your running gear and your dog and hang out around some French and Australian diplomats. See if you can work up any entente cordiale.
Well, I do go running with my dog. But I can't run with her if I'm trying to beat a time.
Right.
Because obviously she's not a machine. She wants to stop and chase squirrels and etc.
And do you also have the deeply social thing where you see other people with their dogs that you know, and then basically they say dogs look like their owners or vice versa, but it's more that dogs, the owners act like their dogs, in that you'll meet other people in the park and kind of sniff around each other for half an hour.
Well, you know, you do, they do say that you get the dog that you're karmically suited to, so my dog Taylor is really needy, doesn't understand rules. She's not like, I don't get rules, you know, don't tell me what to do, the man. It's just literally like, I don't know what's going on.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, so she is very like me.
I read a good news article this morning. Not a good news article, it sounds like something a flyer, someone's talking into a Bible. Oh, you've heard the good news. I read a good news article this morning, which was about the National Trust, Dinton, in Wiltshire, which they're looking to let the house and fence off some of the park, and people are complaining about You know, locals don't, they still want access to the park. There's a really fantastic view of Salisbury Cathedral, and people are talking, people there in lockdown, people go there to sledge and stuff. But the funny thing about it was they kept interviewing dog walkers, and it was just lightly ridiculous and had a brilliant subtext of what the place is like.
Yeah.
It said, we spoke to Arthur, who was walking his dogs, Poppy and Mirabelle, and then he said, blah, blah, blah. And then we spoke to Gemma, who was walking her dogs, Chummy and Lala. She said, da, da, da. And it was just all so lovely. Home counties. And in the end, I just was just tuned into the dog names and not hearing the article at all. It was just like Smoochie and
do you know what I find interesting about the south of England?
Yeah.
Which is very different to the north of England, where in the north people are so much more confident about talking to strangers.
Yeah.
They're not friendlier, they're more confident.
Yeah, more gregarious. To being friendly.
They won't think that, oh, someone thinks I'm a weirdo for chatting to them. But then here, in London, if you're lonely, you've got no friends, get a dog, and it feels like you're walking around with Beyonce. Everyone stops to talk to you. Everyone wants to arrange a doggy play date. And it, socially, I've got to know more people having a dog than even my kids going to primary school here.
Or being a comedian.
Yeah.
You know, where everyone knows each other, but you then you go away from the gig and da da da.
Yeah. Do you know what? I get really sad about that sometimes. In lockdown, I felt so sad about how much I have taken comedian friends for granted.
Yeah, yeah.
And just gone, well, they're a comic friend and I'll see them eventually.
Yeah.
And then you know, year goes by, more years go by, you find out they've had kids you've never met.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I make...
Sometimes you'll be talking to someone, where is so-and-so? And they say, oh, yeah, they left the country.
Yeah.
You're like, I won't be seeing them in Southampton anytime soon.
Yeah, and you just realise that these people have been part of your life for years, but you've just taken it all. That's why I love Edinburgh, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like we're all in the same house for a while.
Yeah, and there is an upside to that presumption, isn't there? Because we really are, the gigs and the travel and the similarity of experience really do bond you. So sometimes you do see someone for the first time in, well, you kind of feels like it was 2 years and it turns out it was seven.
Yes.
And you're like, so, you know, you just pick up where you left off.
Yes.
And that's great.
Now, how do you feel about stopping?
I think we should stop right now. Oh, we did an extra bit and came back to Northfields.
It's amazing.
And I just spent, we actually came under the awning of that beautiful cinema, which I have so many happy memories in.
Do you have to go home or can I buy you a coffee?
Let's have a coffee. Before we go, we should say farewell to before we have that, you know.
This has been so lovely.
Oh, it's been great. Well, thanks for running and, good to have you on the podcast.
Oh, do you know what? Honestly, I think... In lockdown, podcasts that comics do have been my friends. Because in lockdown, I just really missed the company of comics and the stuff they talk about. And thank you for your podcast, because honestly, it was a huge reason why I've been able to just run 7.5 kilometres and feel completely okay.
Brilliant. Well, thanks. Thanks for being on this podcast and celebrating that one. It's a double win for me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.